Commentary Track. Conversations with film historians and filmmakers. With Frank Thompson.
Hello, welcome back to the Commentary Track. I'm your host, Frank Thompson. This is part two of my talk with L.Q. Jones, the great actor and director. I hope you listened last week. If you didn't, just put this on pause right now. Go to the archive, listen to last week's, and then you'll be all caught up. We talked about Peckinpah and Bud Bedeker and Randolph Scott and all sorts of things, and those names come up again in this episode, as does a lot of discussion on L.Q.'s movie A Boy and His Dog, his 1975 film that he directed, and which is up for a re-release in the very near future. He's restored it, and it looks better than ever, and it's coming back out. So a little bit of an explanation. This does not pick up exactly where the last episode left off, and that is because the last episode left off partly because I noticed that the memory card was full and saw that little flashing sign out of the corner of my eye on my recorder. And so I had to change memory cards, and we probably lost a couple of minutes, that's all. But I had asked him about Peckinpah, and the question was basically, because Peckinpah could be a mite prickly, sometimes very rough to work with, I asked L.Q. if he had been like that from the beginning, or if he grew into his Peckinpah-ness. And so as we join our conversation now, that's basically what I had asked him just before we started. So we'll pick it up right there with talking about Sam Peckinpah with L.Q. Jones, and I will see you on the other side.
What Sam did, he determined this was the way to handle people, in that the first 3 days of a picture, he set about so that no one would speak or trust anybody else on the picture. That's just the way. The crew hated the cast. The cast couldn't stand the producer. The producer couldn't talk to the crew. It was a mess. And then he would put it back together as guess who is the father figure? As Sam. Now he's in total control of everything. And we're now back to being one happy family. Well, he did that through. He didn't do it that way. I can't speak to Deadly Companions. Ride the High Country, that's the way he was. Major Dundee, that's the way he was. The Wild Bunch, The Lady Is My Wife, Noon Wine. He would do it that way. And then he's in total charge. With all of the talents and egos that you have on a picture, in the hundreds on each picture, it's pretty hard to do, but he could do it. But as he got a little more confused from drug use, from drinking, he could take us apart, but he couldn't put us back together again. So everybody was like this. And a good example of that is Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. You've seen it?
Sure.
There's some beautiful things in it, sure. And there's some shabby crap. And it's a hard balance of which is the more dominant. But Sam took us apart, but he couldn't put us back together again. You have people like Bob Dylan, Christofferson, Coburn, the people that we had working. Show you how weird it is. I'm playing Black Harris in the black BVDs. We did my scene. We should have done it about a month. We got there. Slim and I arrived. And they were paying me so much money for me. My agent didn't believe they would pay that kind of money. But there we are. So we're flying down. And Slim expects, they're going to meet us at the plane with limo with our wardrobe in it and a makeup man, and we'll go to the set. But we're already made up. We're in wardrobe. Tam will tell us what he wants to do. Mainly, we'll shoot it. The next day, we'll do pickups, and then we're going home that evening. They're not going to pay this kind of money. I got there. I was there for 10 days before I ever saw the camera or Peckinpah. As a matter of fact, first one I ever heard of, Sam called me up after about 9 or 10 days, and he said, listen, Gordy is having a little trouble. Would you help with the wardrobe? Sure. So I worked on wardrobe. I was the most expensive wardrobe person in the history of the business. but he couldn't put us back together. We never got together. And it was so weird. I was the producer, was a sweetheart, Dave Weisbart. Knew the my second pick, third picture was with Dave. That was 20, 30 years before that. Nice man, considerate of everybody, listened, thought, fought for his production. And he and Sam and Chris are sitting there. I'm talking with them. Sam and Chris decide that I was not killed. Now, that means we're going to have to reshoot about a third of the picture so that my character can still be alive. There is no sense in it, but Sam and Chris decided that's what would help the picture. To finally bring that crap to a halt and put the kibosh on it, we had a vice president of MGM fly down to tell me that I couldn't be in the rest of the picture, which I was very difficult to accept because I had to get back and start another picture. But Sam just, he made that decision. So you never relaxed around Sam, which was what really made him a good director, because you were always thinking about what you'd better do and what you were going to do. Now, remember I told you he was a stickler for detail. I've worked for sticklers for detail before. We were shooting out on the plains. We got the cavalry, because we had the Mexican cavalry. We had like 600 riders from the cavalry in there. Anyway, we're out on this thing, and we're shooting, and we get through. It is now 5 minutes till dark, and Sam decides he wants to do the long shot of a day scene. He had not discussed this with Lucian. He just calls him over and says, this is what we're going to do. Well, it took a little while for him to get the lights there and the generators. By 9 or 10 o'clock, we got the shot. Only because Lucian was who Lucian was. And so we go on about our business. 2 months late, 2 months later, we're doing the close-ups. And the close-up is Bob Ryan, Paul Strother, and myself. Okay? The way it was, Bob's here, Paul was here, Strother was here, and I'm here. The camera just started over here and worked through all of us. He didn't have to reset. We just relight a little bit. And when we got through shooting my close-up, and that's the last one we're going to do, Sam said, oh, God, no louder than that. And then he didn't say anything else. And all of us had worked around Sam saying, oh, Christ, what is it now? And we sat there. Nobody said anything or moved. We just sat. And after a couple of minutes, Sam said, what'd you think, Q? And I said, what do you mean, what'd you think about you? I said, Sam, even now, I'm preparing my acceptance speech. It was marvelous. Oh, okay. Lucian? It's fine, Sam. And he went through every chief. Took us 10 minutes, 12 minutes. Finally got to Tony, prop master. What'd you think, Tony? What do I think? It's fine, Sam. That's great. That's lovely. But Sam said, tell me, Tony, How many beans does LQ have on his plate? Everybody's looking around like they're looking for a place to hide. And he's saying, how the hell do I know how many, who the fuck knows how many beans he's got on his plate? Sam says, he has 7. When we shot the long shot, he had 13. You're fired. You want to fire your prop master for any reason when you're 2.5 months into a 4-month picture? Tony could not believe it, but he said, the hell with you and the horse that brung you, and I'm packing up and going home. Well, the producer begged him. Lucian begged him. The cast begged him. The crew begged him. We're all tired of Mexico. He would have nothing. Finally, he relented, bless his heart, and he said, okay, I'll make a deal with you. I will prop the show. I will prop it from my wagon. I will send people onto the set to do what I would ordinarily do. If Peckinpah so much as trips and falls into my wagon, I'm going home that night. That's the only way I'll do the picture. So that's the way we shot the picture. That's attention to detail. I went back and looked. I went back to where the editor was working, and we looked. That's right. As best we could figure out, I had 7 on my plate instead of 13. That's attention to detail.
It is. It's more than attention to detail.
But that's the way Sam was when he worked.
Yeah. That's. Now, you directed a film really early on that I had never seen, I'm sorry to say. And it was a Western. This is... Because I've never seen it, The Devil's Bedroom.
No, count your blessings. You don't know how lucky you are. I have a little company. Whenever I get mad enough, we go make pictures. That was the first one we ever made.
You shot it in Texas?
Yeah.
Where about?
In Jacksonville, Texas, in the big thicket. It is a true story. It's also a terrible motion picture.
I refuse to believe that.
Oh, if you ever saw it, you'd believe it. It also ended up on a couple of 10 best of the year lists. And I finally figured out why. Because I've almost gotten into fights over it. We were going to write a book, Alvy and I, who produced it together, our company. The book was going to be titled... The Pig Got Sick and the Horse Ran Away, which is just 2 of the million things that happened to shoot it down. But it got listed on a couple of 10 best of the year. And it's stupid. But it was from the truth, and people look at it. The only thing I can figure out, they watched it and they figured out, this is the way it really was, and to be this bad, it had to be truth. Therefore, it was a lot better picture than they thought. And it was hideous. It was so bad. But I wouldn't change that for anything in the world. I think the entire picture cost more than the budget for paper clips on The Mask of Zorro. It still runs. Like I said, it is a true story of there's a quirk in the Texas law. Texas law is kind of weird anyway, but there is a quirk in it so that if a member of the family wishes, they may declare you insane and you can be put away. And people have been for sometimes forever, other times till tests could be devised to prove that you're not insane. And all you have to do is a member of your family has to swear out the papers.
Wow.
Well, I had read this story about 2 brothers that owned some land in the Big Thicket. The Big Thicket is practically an African jungle in Texas. It goes on for mile after mile. One of them, their father died, owned some land. One of them loved the land, loved the animals, loved the roughness, and kept it that way, the older brother. The younger brother had found out that there was a possibility of oil, and he wanted to drill. And the older brother did not want that, and it was his to do it as he wanted. So what happened? The younger brother declared the older brother was insane, and they put him away in Huntsville. Well, he was a clever man, and he escaped. And once he escaped, the younger brother's wife had really put him up to it. And the wife is found dead. The brother is found dead. And they know, of course, that the older brother did it. And they run him down. And people think of it as a sexual thing. They ran him to ground in a cave called the Devil's Bedroom. And the locals couldn't get him to come out. They finally doused him with gasoline and set fire to him to get him out.
Yikes.
But it killed him. And then it was found out that he had done nothing to his brother or his sister-in-law. So he was totally innocent.
Hmm.
And that was the story we did. And God, it's terrible. It really is terrible.
Well, I only bring it up because, A, I want to see it now that I know that it exists. But did you want to be an actor and a director?
No, you can't be both. And you need only look at the work of people who do it to realize one side of it, they don't know what they're doing.
Has been done, but it's...
Citizen Kane is the last one that comes to my mind as being that way. I really wanted to act, and I was lucky. The old man just blessed me with a modicum of talent, and I've been able to stay busy. I've stayed busy for 58 years doing this, and I love it. But you realize after a while that if you really want to be creative, you must direct. You must produce, probably write. It's the only way you can really do it. It takes a great deal of talent, an immeasurable amount of luck. I have found very few people, myself included, who have been able to do it. But that's the only way you can be totally creative. And I did The Devil's Bedroom. I produced another couple of pictures, and then I got hold of A Boy and His Dog, and I wrote that, and I helped produce that, and I did direct it. But it was something that I did that because my crew, I use the same crew for every show, have all since we started. They went out with the first director for one day and then called me up that night, said they'd like to get together. And that's the way we run my company. Everybody says what they think, and we can work together that way. And they just said we won't work with him. He has no idea what he's doing for what we know you want to do. And if you don't direct it, we won't do it.
So you were kind of backed into directing it.
I didn't have much choice.
Yes. Well, it's a good picture. And you did a really wonderful job on it. Now, tell me about, it's going to be re-released pretty soon, right? How did that happen?
Well, first you have to understand, you know the business. What is the length of time that a motion picture will require in which it makes about 95% of all of the money it's going to make? What is that length of time?
I would say that probably in the first few years, right?
Try the first 7 days.
Wow.
95% of our business. Now, if it's a huge picture, if it's a huge hit, yes, it'll make its money for a year or two. Now with DVDs and Blu-rays, that's changed. But when I came out with Boy, you either did it in the theaters or you did it on public television. That was about it. Well, a Bornese dog, first off, this is great fun for me, by a number of critics, was chosen as the best science fiction picture ever made. Do you believe that?
I can believe it.
That's BS. But it's so much better than having them say it's one of the worst pictures ever made.
It's much better.
Right. So it's I've got a cast that's unbelievable. The story by Harlan Ellison is marvelous. I had to write the script because Harlan ran into one of those spots where you can't think of what you're doing. And we had to do it, so I wrote the script. But I had such good help. But anyway, the picture is now, as we sit here, let me think now, from the beginning, that's 42 years old. And we're going out for the third time into the theaters. Bear in mind, this is what's great fun. Other than Walt Disney Pictures, which come out every 7 years, mm-hmm. or eight, and should, they're beautiful classics.
Sure.
A Bornese Dog is the only motion picture ever in the history of our business to go out successfully in theaters worldwide a second time. And we're going to do a third time now.
Wow.
It is, Disney's pictures do it. Other pictures will come out. I don't care what. Gone with the Wind comes out and is great in the Keys and then drops dead. Then the next time they release it, it'll be great in Europe, but they can't do anything with it here. Boy did the whole world twice, and we hope it'll do it. It's great fun because it is, what do I say? It's a one-of-a-kind picture. You've seen it?
I sure have.
Okay, so yeah. I can't lie to you. It truly is a one-of-a-kind picture. It's never been done, and it probably never will be done again. And part of that is because of the dog.
Yeah.
You know, the dog is not good. He is magnificent. It is the greatest performance, not tricks, the greatest performance by an animal in the history of our business.
I have a friend who's a film director, and he worked on a movie with a dog. He said it was the worst experience of his life.
Can be.
So you had an okay time with this dog?
I fell in love with him. I told Jason Robards, which we talked about as being the best actor in our business,
mm-hmm.
I told Jason, if you can hit your marks and say your lines like Tiger, I'll make a star out of you. And he knew exactly what I was talking about. I can't help but go over part. To begin with, we made the thing you don't want to do, that I didn't want to do, was call attention to the fact that it's a dog. How do you do that? Well, one of the things is you shoot from his level and you treat him just like any other actor. You don't call attention to the fact he's a dog. He is a character in your picture. He is the lead in the picture, as a matter of fact. Don Johnson just thinks he is. But one of the first thing that happens with the dog is he wags his tail. Now, all animals with tails use them for balance. And so, yes, they're going to do that. But I said, okay, we don't want that to happen. That'll be one thing we can correct. So I made a device that would hold his tail. And the first day we shot, he put it on, worked like a dream. The second day, they forgot to bring it out. And we didn't have it. He didn't wag his tail. He never wagged his tail on the picture.
He knew it was out of character.
He learned what we wanted. Now, people say, that's crazy. You need only look at the picture to find out that is not the case. The dog is, he's dead now, but is brilliant in what he did. I accuse the handler, Joe Harnock, of reading in the script every night and working out what he was going to do. he had his own room, he had his own car, his chairs on the set. But the one thing that, one of the things, if you watch a picture, there is no failure. You can always, if you watch it closely, you'll see the animal looking at his trainer. And you can tell.
Sure.
No matter how clever you think you're devising it, you can see him watching the trainer. Watch the dog. He never, ever refers to another person. If you watch him, you'll see the boy's lips moving. He's telling the dog sometimes, reminding him what to do. The dog understood about 50 or 60 words. So you could tell him, stop, bend, sit. You didn't have to show him it, just tell him. He understood it. Remember, they're communicating through their minds. So what we did was, I guess 3 or 4 months before we were going to shoot the picture, the crew had already gotten together, all of us. We knew what we were going to do. That's the way we make the picture. But I asked Joe, is it possible to move command from yourself to an actor? Well, he said, we've never been able to do it. I said, let's give it a try. He said, you bet. So for about 2 or 3 months, we would go out once or twice a week, 3 times a week, with Don, Joe, the dog, and myself. And he transferred the command from himself to Don. So the dog will look at Don, and if he doesn't remember what to do, Don can tell him what to do. It's unbelievable. There's a scene in it where the boy is going down under chasing Quilla June, and he leaves the dog. It's a very poignant scene.
Sure, I remember.
And I love dogs. I couldn't have done it.
Mm-hmm.
The damn dog sits there and cries. A big fat tear comes down his fur. We didn't put any glycerin in his eyes. He just sat there and cried.
Wow.
He's amazing. And I tell people this, and they say, all you have to do is watch it to realize that dog is phenomenal in what he did.
Did he ever make any other pictures?
Oh, he was in the Brady Bunch.
Was he?
He did a lot of television. I tried to buy him, and we went up to an unmentionable figure that I was willing to pay for him. And I said, look, I will give you the guarantee. I will never, ever allow him to compete. I'll never let him do any other picture other than if we do another Boy and His Dog, which we were going to, or if I'm directing. But I'll never compete with your... And they said, no, we make too much money. We can't let him. Right. And he lived for another, a year or 2 or 3, and then died. And I sat down and cried like a baby for 3 days. So... It was just a phenomenal animal.
That's I'm a dog guy too, so this is you're preaching to the converted here, because I've seen the picture. It is a remarkable performance.
Phenomenal. The picture itself, how do I say it? Since I've directed it and wrote it and produced it and helped sell it, you can't trust what I say, and rightly so. And yet, It's a piece of magic. It's one of those things where you can't tell why or how. And I wish I could say I was responsible for that, for it working. Bear in mind, we're doing a picture that was set at that particular time, 30-some-odd years in the future. A dog is the lead. Before your very eyes, animals turn to humans, and humans turn to animals without any makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And the lead is a talking dog. And people tell me that most, because I went with the picture a lot of times showing it, the thing most often said about the picture was, it's so real. Now, the thing I just told you, you can say this is real. But if you saw the picture, you'll realize,
yep,
I'm not lying to you.
Nope.
The animal is worth the price of admission 10 times over.
Yeah.
Jason is marvelous. Don Johnson is marvelous. Helene and Alvy and Baylor, everybody in the piece. It's one of those things. You know, I told you I made all these pictures, but only once in like 10,000 times does everything work. No matter how bad you try to screw it up, it works. And that's a Bornese dog. It is, well, for giggles, at first I had trouble because people, it was so, they thought the idea was so serious, you couldn't laugh at it. Well, I went to, and saw Young Frankenstein and counted the laughs. There are more laughs in a Bornese dog than there is in Young Frankenstein. And Young Frankenstein is fabulous.
Yeah.
But it's what we do is take a very serious subject and treat it in a certain way. And that's why I can say it is a piece unto itself. I really, it's one of those things where most of it I made with my money. So if it didn't went down the tube, so would I. I didn't really care whether I got my money back or not after having made a Bornese dog, because the experience was such that I was rewarded so many times over, money having nothing to do with it. And I wish there were a way I can get at younger people. A lot of their parents are going to tell them to go see it, and we'll see to it that they see it. But I really wish I could find a way to get their attention. I'm not saying they'll like it, because a lot of people are not going to like it. It's designed not to tickle your fancy and make you enjoy it. It's designed to entertain you and tell you something. So if you tell me you don't like the picture, you don't hurt my feelings at all. Till I find out maybe you didn't react to the things I thought you were going to react to. But how the heck do you tell people? Folks, for your own, there are people, our business is built on success and money. There are very few people in our business that don't know a Bornese dog. It's pretty, very funny. And when we finally finished it, we showed it. We showed it to one group. They asked us to. We set it up for him. He got on the radio and wired his brother, called his brother, who was on the plane, the jet, company jet, saying, come back. This is the picture of the future. We have to have it. Come see it. He turned his plane around in mid-flight, came back. We set it for him the next morning. He went in, looked at it, stayed about 5 minutes, walked out, said, that's the biggest piece of shit I've ever seen in my life. Got back on his plane, and that was the end of that. Every other studio in town looked at it and said, it's marvelous. It's fantastic. What the hell are you going to do with it? People won't buy tickets. Well, we've already proved that to be wrong. It's fun things. It stayed in, you know, the Varsity Theater in Seattle?
Sure.
We stayed in the Varsity for one solid year. That's the only picture plan. That's pretty good. Except we stayed in one theater in Paris, France, for 8 years.
That's a pretty good run.
Fair run.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Now, what made you decide to re-release it now? Did you do a remastering of it?
Yes.
Has it been fixed up?
We've digitally remastered it. We're going to come out in Blu-ray. We're going to come out in regular DVDs. We're going to go up to 2K in the theaters. That's why I did it. I wanted people to see it, but I wanted to, over the years, it had degenerated because we're working with film. And you couldn't do anything with that except do new prints. But the printing master kept going downhill, and we were about 8 or 10 years ago, we were in great danger of the picture sliding off film. It was the best film ever made, and it only lasted about 30 years.
Yeah.
They told us it more like 50 to 60. So we saved it. We now have that. But I wanted to get it back out. It's a picture we made for actually young people. I'm not talking about what your chronological age is, because a lot of people at 10 years old act like they're 75, and a lot of people at 80 are acting like three-year-olds. But it's a picture that's made for young people that think young. And it's one of those things where, I hate to say this without, this sounds egotistical, I don't mean it that way. Well, you've seen it, I can't lie to you. It's a picture of its own picture. It's like nothing else. We use techniques in it they still haven't used today. They're trying to get there, but they haven't done it yet. It is totally in unto itself in its picture. That's why I tell people, hey, if you're going to go see it, I hope you like it. And they say, well, we sure you do because you directed it. That's not why. I hope you like it, because if you don't, you're screwed, because it's going to stay with you as long as you live. You'll remember a boy and his dog. And how many pictures can you say that of?
I've seen it a couple of times. Saw it when it first came out. Saw it again maybe 10 years ago, I guess.
Let me ask you. Well, I'll tell you. I found out. You know what the average number of times the picture has to be shown before you realize what is happening? Would you guess?
Three times.
Huh?
Three times.
Actually, it's a little bit over four. Not because it's what do I say, things that are happening that you have no idea. It is, but you don't realize that. But it is, what do I say, everything that is brand new. For instance, if something goes wrong, you can't call the sheriff. They don't, A, know what a telephone is, B, what a cell phone is, C, what a policeman is. None of this goes into, it's a totally different world.
Yeah.
And that what happens is you can't get comfortable for a while, because everything that we give you is new. For the laughter, normally a picture will give you the punchline or a laugh line. Then it'll give you a pause of 2 or 3 or 4 seconds before it goes on. We don't give you time. You can't pick it up in time to laugh at it. Too bad. We're on to the next joke, which can be sometimes difficult to follow. The dog is, you stand there, or I do. I've seen the picture over 500 times. Well, I have to work on it.
Well, sure.
You know, I gave up after about 30 or 40 times through and watch only the dog. I am so absolutely astounded at what he does that I have never watched the picture that I don't find one more thing that he did that I wasn't aware of when he did it. He's amazing. He truly is amazing. Jason is marvelous. Helene Winston, all of them, everybody's superb.
Now, when's it going to come back out?
We're not sure, because we want to really do it right. But X number of companies want to do it. X number of companies don't want to do it. You know, we've got all together about, I don't know, 6 or 7 or 8. But I'm looking for people, well, like yourself. I'm looking for someone who is really dedicated to the picture and what it can do, that's not there just simply to make a buck. Hey, sports fan, there's nothing wrong with making a buck.
Sure.
Don't get me wrong.
I wouldn't know.
Yeah, welcome to the club. But that's the way it is. But there are certain pictures. To Kill a Mockingbird, would you put a limit on the people that should see To Kill a Mockingbird because of the fact that it's older?
Absolutely not.
I mean, what
great picture.
Yeah, what a hole in your growing up or growing old or whatever it is that you didn't see that. Or The Paths of Glory or Gone with the Wind. There are what? Maybe 100 of these, 200, 300 that you should see. And we don't get to see them. And I wanted before they sharpen my feet and drive me in the ground, I wanted to be sure to take another stroke at people seeing it. And I found a company. They're a bunch of younger people who, the people who did it before, What Dream and First Run, did a great job. But these are a bunch of kids who I think now know how to talk to the younger people today. And so we're going to go out and try. We'll go back in the theaters, and then we'll do the rest of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, cross your fingers. We'll see.
I am crossing my fingers. I think it's a great idea because it's a terrific movie and always been a favorite of mine, and I've seen it. We'll see it again.
Let me ask you, and please be as honest as you can, because that's the way we built the picture.
I'm widely known for my honesty.
Good.
I lie about it all the time.
Good. Would you have been deprived if you had not seen A Boy and His Dog?
I think so. As you say, it's not like any other movie. It's a science fiction movie, kinda.
Mm-hmm.
But in a way, it's not. It's kind of presents like an alternative world in a way. It's,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a terrific movie.
You know what it is to me?
What's that?
If you had to class it a mystery, science fiction, western, what was it? You've already said
it's a romance.
To me, it's a love story. It's a love story between the boy and the dog. Because the dog is what every boy, every person should have. A mentor, a brother, a sister, a mother, a father, a general. He's all of these things. The dog is, you know. I wish I could say that I'm responsible for it. We did it in spite of me.
I've seen The Wild Bunch more times than I can count. I've seen it almost as many times as you've seen A Boy and His Dog, I think.
Probably so, but to me, this is just personal. To me, The Wild Bunch is not the best picture Sam made.
You've told me that before. We will we'll agree to disagree.
Well, what do you think about Ride the High Country?
I love Ride the High Country. I love Cable Hogue. I admire many of his films, even if I don't finally think they're great.
Well, consider, Sam made The Wild Bunch about 18 times.
Yeah.
Literally did. We got it right, eventually. But every picture Sam made was The Wild Bunch. And, of course, it's not the same story, for Christ's sake. But his theory, which is right. Actually, there are two theories. Sam believed it, and it shows up in his pictures, although you may not think so. One is that I wish to go to my house justified.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing. The other is that the people of the world, and especially the men, as they go along, begin to outlive their usefulness and become shop-worn, not needed, and very fragile. And that's what that's the people he tells his stories about. Sam is that way. And so that's the truth that comes through in his stuff. He did want to go to his house justified, and he wanted to justify himself, but was so lost, he wouldn't have known if he had gotten there. But that's why I say every picture he made was The Wild Bunch.
Well, certainly Ride the High Country and The Wild Bunch both share that theme of men at the end of what they consider to be their usefulness and trying to figure out what their role in life really was.
That's right. Look at Pat Garrett and Billy the Head.
Yeah.
Same thing. Ballad of Cable Hogue, same thing. Noon Wine, same thing. The Lady is My Wife, same thing.
Noon Wine is terrific. It's too bad that it's not easier for people to see.
You know, they burned it.
Yeah.
It almost disappeared. And I think, truly, that is really one of Sam's finest piece of work.
For people who don't know, that was a TV production. It was Jason Robards and
Olivia De Havilland.
Yeah, really good.
Per
really
Oscarsson. Good. Now, there's a talent for you.
It sure was, yeah.
We were going to do another picture, The Castaway. Did you ever read it? James Gould Cousins?
No.
Read it. You'll enjoy it.
Okay.
It has one person in it, and where two of us were going to play, Para and myself. It's about a guy that something's chasing in the sewers, and he stumbles through a door that is into a big department store. And that's what the story is about, The Castaway, about who he is and what he is. And Per was going to play him one way, and I was going to play him as another. But Per is so good. Petrified to try to follow what he was doing. But that's Peg and Paul. We were going to do, what was the one with the dueling banjos?
Deliverance.
Sam was supposed to do that. There were two or three others we were going to do that were marvelous that he didn't get to do because of the illness and because of being Peckinpah.
Yeah. He seems to have shot himself in the foot, I think.
Time he opened his mouth.
Yeah. He's probably his biggest enemy, his own worst enemy in terms of business.
Oh, you have no idea.
Yeah.
I told you he'd be committed. We were going to do Noon Wine. And he called up and said, listen, remember, he'd been sitting about 4 years at that point after his fiasco. You got something there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's keep checking.
So he says, look, we're going to do it. Okay, great. And I want you to do so. It's not much of a part, very little part. And I said, Sam, I can't do it. We're working on the Virginian. And I was doing, I was a regular to do the Virginian. I said, we're shooting it. And we're working 5 days a week. We're working all day and part of the night. I can't do it. You know, I'd love to. Okay. And about 3 days later, he called him and said, listen, Q, you can do it. I said, no, Sam. He said, no, we're going to shoot on Saturday and Sunday. So he changed it so I could be in on the day. I got hardly anything to do. Anyway, well, I said, okay. So I called out. I'm a nut on wardrobe. That's why he asked me to help Gardy. And the wardrobe lady said, look, this is what can we do? And I said, well, I'll tell you what, Friday, I think, we'll finish fairly early. Do you mind working an hour or so over? She said, be tickled dead so we can get it. So I go over and we do the wardrobe, last like 2 hours to get the wardrobe set, all set. And Sam had said, when you get through, come by the office and let's talk. Okay. So we sat and shot the breeze for a while. It's now like 10 o'clock at night, maybe a little bit later. And for some reason, I'll never know Sam said to me, LK, why don't people like me? This came out of the blue. And I said, well, I'd rather not. No, he says, really? What? I said, well, it's because you're a horse's ass, mainly. You pick on little people. You'll jab somebody like Holden or whatever, but you really pick on young people or smaller people on your crew who can't fight back. I can fight back. You don't get on my case very much. And some of the others you do, but you just pick on small people without much. And he sat there and he thought about it for a minute and just said, you know, you're probably right. And I got to do something about it. Would you do me a favor? I said, well, whatever. He said, look, when we're working together, the phone rang. And he picked it up. And it was the little prop girl, a wardrobe lady. Now, mind you, it's 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning. She's been there probably since 5 o'clock in the morning doing her work. She said something that upset him. He cursed her. You could hear him for a block and a half. He called her everything you can think of, made up some new ones, and then went back over all of them. Slammed the phone down, turned back to me and said, so now you watch me. And if you find that I'm picking on people, you let me know. He had no idea what he had done. It was completely somebody else.
Yeah.
That was Peckinpah, and that's what it was hard to deal with. You never knew when he was gonna go.
Yeah.
Now he didn't do that at first. Back to your question, did he degrade as he went along? Yeah. The offstage person became more prominent. he lost grasp. Like I say, he couldn't put his pictures back together with the people. And that frightened him. I likened it too. I was doing a show, and we were working with a Brahma bull that weighed about 1,800 pounds. And for the guys to get, myself included, although I was used to it and didn't have to worry, we gave him a shot to calm him down. Well, it didn't calm him down. And we gave him another shot and another shot. Now what happens? The bull became petrified. He was so frightened because nothing worked the way it was supposed to. I mean, where he would do his head this way, he didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah.
And you could watch it take place. And he finally just got where he wiped out half of the set because he was so panicked with what he couldn't figure out. Sam was exactly the same way. He didn't know why anything was happening or how to correct it. And that's very difficult. Because did you ever talk to Fern Lee? His sister?
No, never.
A gorgeous lady with brains you can't believe that is a very religious person, but is a very studied person. You would think, with all the education in the family, that would have helped Sam. But I think it worked the other way. I think he got more panicked because he could see Fern Lee and her grasp of things. He could see Walter the Friendly Bear, her husband. He could see his brothers working the law and their sophisticated approach, and he couldn't figure out how to do it. And the fear of not being able to panicked him as much as not being able to. He had no anchor. As much as the more they tried to help him, the weirder he got. You know, it's really very strange.
It really is a shame because he was, I hesitate to say he was a genius, but
he was.
But he was a great filmmaker.
His stuff comes in a short period of time. Sam did maybe, 18 pictures?
Yeah.
Maybe 17, 18? 8 or 9 of them, no, 7 anyway, are classics. Not whether they're good or not, different story, but they're classics. That's a hell of a percentage for winning.
I think they're good and they're classics. I mean, there's...
Yeah, or they can be bad and still a classic.
Yeah. The three that we mentioned, Ride the High Country, Ballad of Cable Hogan, The Wild Bunch, are as good as any movie's ever got, as far as I'm concerned. They're all three great.
In their way. See, to me, Ride the High Country is the best Saturday afternoon, eat your popcorn, hold your girl's hand, and watch. That's Saturday afternoon Western. Nothing even comes close to it.
It's a beautiful picture, too.
Oh, it's gorgeous. Then you turn with the Mariette Hartley. Okay? When I came back to see the thing we were talking about, Scorsese had done the stuff with the Wild Bunch. He asked me, he said, we're going to run it. I was through for a couple of weeks. Please go by and look at it and tell me what you think. That's where I was. Not at Warner's, but we're showing over at Goldwyn, I think. Anyway, Mariette's there. And she said, hey, can you tell me? I've never seen the Wild Bunch. What's it like? I said, well, Mariette, wait a minute. It's ridiculous. We're about to see it. When it's over, we can talk. Please do. Okay. Ran the picture. So happens she was sitting right in front of me when the picture was running. Picture was over. The lights came on. Everybody stood up and was chattering and I'd walk. Mariette didn't move. I would say it took her a good 2 minutes, maybe a little longer. She stood up and turned around, and her eyes literally were that big. And she said, I see why you said look at it and not have you tell me. So the first time, can you remember the first time you saw The Bunch?
Oh, of course I can. That's a movie that I can honestly say I walked into the movie theater one person and walked out another person. It changed everything.
Yeah, see, now you think I'm saying it wrong. I don't think I am. when I said with Mask of Zorro, we change it. With the Wild Bunch, we changed the way motion pictures were made all over the world, not just with Sam, but all over the world. And the reason that happened, I think, is because you can look at it and you can say, oh, it's just a bunch of action. I can do that. You can't do that.
No.
And the reason you can't do it is not just a bunch of action. Every character in the Wild Bunch is character driven. So that when you get to the action, it's the only thing you could logically do with that character.
Yeah.
And so one feeds off of the other. If you then do what most of the people do, thinking they're copying it, so that you have a whole bunch of mindless action, that's all it is. It's a bunch of mindless action. And so we kept, you know, what, the next 5, 6, 10, 15 years were people trying to duplicate the Wild Bunch.
Sure.
And they misunderstood, because every time the subject comes up and somebody mentions the violence first, I always know they don't get that picture.
They don't understand.
They don't understand it, because it's the most emotional movie, and it's a movie about people. And it's a,
specifically, it's a, men who are lost to
yeah,
begin with.
And one of the, it's a sad movie.
Oh, it's
but I can also not think of another movie in which the characters laugh so much. It's also about...
No, in spite of it. See?
Yeah, yep. It's about people who are at the end of their trail in a way, but they still have this
they
spirit.
They have a zest for living.
Yeah.
And he gives you that even while he's pressing them down in the garbage.
Yeah.
But he gives you... See, people ask, how did you come about doing what you did with A Boy and His Dog? Well, if people tell you I do it all myself, they're either lying or an idiot, because I learn from every actor I work with, every writer that I read his script, every director, what he does, you learn. And I learned from Sam attention to detail and go against character. So that Boy and His Dog is a could it's there's no there's very little slaughter, none any. Very little bad language, but it presses down on you
sure.
in such a way. And yet the two main characters are hysterically funny.
Yeah.
You know, but that comes from I can feed you something, but I'll make you enjoy it if you laugh. If I tell you I'm serious, you may turn me off.
Sure.
You'll sit there, though, for the humor. And then all of a sudden you realize you've been transported someplace and you think you have moved. Yeah. But you were dead right. See, and people tend to dismiss Sam. He was truly a genius. He was misguided. But he was, can you think of what would happen, pardon me, with Sam if he had, like Ford, lasted another 20 years? 30 years. And remember, he was shut out of our business for about 2.5 years after Major Dundee
yeah.
and before Noon One. They wouldn't even let him on the lot.
Sure.
You know?
I think that's why the Wild Bunch shocked everybody so much, because nobody expected anything from him.
No. They thought he was dead and gone.
Yeah.
As far as the business was
but then
concerned.
He comes out with a movie that's his... one of the greatest movies anybody ever made.
It is. I don't mean to denigrate it when I say I think Ride the High Country's a better. It's a better movie per se in that its story is normal, usual. And he took the normal and usual and made it unusual and abnormal.
Yeah.
I mean, I sit there toward the end of that picture. I can't watch it and not break into tears.
Yeah.
Watching Joel and Randy work.
Well, it's also, yeah, it works as a kind of farewell to Randolph Scott and Joel McRae, too.
He's tipping the hat to him.
Yeah, he really is. It's a beautiful, it's a little bit like what Siegel did with John Wayne and The Shootist.
Oh,
to give him
identical.
A nice benediction to their
yeah.
career.
Aren't we great? Aren't they great?
Yeah.
Don't we wish we were part of this? That's why he noticed he put the line in about that Joel has of going to my house justified.
Yeah.
He wanted somebody like Joel or Randy to say the line.
Yeah. Because when those guys speak, you believe it. Both of them. Yeah, you do.
I adored both of them. I got to work with Randy twice and with Joel maybe three or four times. That to me, there is no greater, no better person in our business than Joel, and Randy is right close to him.
Yeah, I tell you, those that Bud Bedeker series of films with Randolph Scott are just as enjoyable as any Westerns anybody ever made.
They never got any better.
They're spare. They're beautiful. He did almost everything outside. Probably for budget reasons. They couldn't build a lot of sets and everything. But he had this, they just had this great look. The scripts are always word perfect.
Bert.
Bert Kennedy, yeah.
But the, because he was really dedicated to what he did in directing. It wasn't frivolous with him. It looked like he was laughing and giggling, but he was using the same approach Sam used, misdirecting your attention on the set to what he was really doing. And then when you sat down and looked at the final thing, you were surprised at A, what you had done and what other people had done. You really can't get any better than what I said, but what would have happened? The reason we made them that price, Harry Joe Brown was the producer.
Sure.
We're doing the scene. This is funny. Did you ever see the thing we did, Buchanan Rides Alone?
Absolutely.
Okay. I was in Vegas, and I was playing around losing my dollar and a half that I had. And a couple of the pit bosses, actually one of them at the Sands, said, look, they're running one of your shows tonight at our special screening. I'm sure you know this. They ran for the people who worked at like 2 o'clock in the morning because they couldn't get there any other time. Well, they were working, and they set it up and showed. And so we went to see it. I sat there watching it with the crowd. There were like, I don't know, 150 of us there watching the show. And it went through that scene where I'm burying him and I'm carving his name in the tree, and I start haranguing with him, starting off with the eulogy and then going to the argument with him. And they got to the end and they stopped the film. And I thought, they've broken it. But no, there was about a minute or two, and they started back over at that reel that is in, and ran it and went on through with the rest of the picture. And when we got through, I was talking to the manager, and I said, gosh, what happened? Did the film, I didn't know, it didn't look like the film had broken. Was there a problem? He said, no, we have a problem. We found out people think that scene is so funny that they would laugh all the way through it, and you couldn't hear a lot was happening. And so what happened? They would stay and see it a second time to see that scene, and they're costing me money because they're taking up seats where they don't have to buy a ticket. So I figured, what the hell? We ran the scene, and then I'd go back and show it again, and then you're going to leave when it's over.
Well, that's just good thinking.
Oh, you bet. He knew exactly what he was doing. No. But Bud is Harry Joe, we're doing that scene where I'm carving, and it was very difficult because I was standing on my horse's saddle, and you can't put all that weight straight down on his shoulders without making him shift a little bit. So I was having to hang on to the tree, and we were misdoing the coverage of his name was Lafe, L-A-F-E, and I'd screw it up because I was about to fall off my horse. And we had to do it like six or seven times. And after the first two, Bud would say, no, we better do it again. I'd hear, and then we'd do it. Then he'd say, what? It was Harry Joe Brown. Harry Joe was sitting there, and he could see the money trickling down.
Sure.
And he died because they figured out if they could do the picture with Randy, they had a budget of $175,000. If they did it at $175,000 or below, they made money. If they got above that, it was a gamble that they didn't get their money back. They knew the window of his fans.
Yeah.
And they did that. And you saw what? He did, what, 8 of those? 9 of those? And they all had the same budget.
Yeah.
All had the same producer. And they all had Randy, who was one of the nice people of the world.
Yeah. And really perfect for that stuff.
You couldn't, who could you get any better? No. Joel, maybe. But he couldn't afford Joel.
Sure.
You know? So, oh well.
Well, I am going to let you go. And I am so thankful for you, for your doing this, and so thrilled to talk to you.
Listen, you have a low threshold of pleasure, if that's the case. But it's great fun to talk. There are a couple of things. You're very knowledgeable about the business. You also knew what you were going to ask when you showed up. And a lot of people don't do that. I don't mean they're terrible people. They got other things to do. Like
I think they're terrible people.
Right.
And I'm a wonderful person.
I keep telling everybody that, but yeah. they snigger. I can't figure that out. But it's been a pleasure. And please tell your audience thank you.
I will.
You know?
I will tell them that they're in for a treat when they hear this one. This is for sure.
Well, ask them, too, if you think about it, to tell them what you really think. And if you don't like it, tell them that, too. But I'd like them to go back. I want them, the people who haven't seen Boy, to see it. Like I told them before, and the people who were owning the theaters nearly killed me. But I said to them, first off, they wouldn't let people in if they didn't get there for the beginning of the picture. They locked the door. They wouldn't let them in. Well, stop and think about it. You were there from the beginning. It took you a while to understand what the heck is happening.
Sure.
Think of it if you had missed, let's say, 10 or 15 minutes, and then you're trying to pick up. Their theory is you're gonna not like the picture because you won't understand it. So do it from the beginning and try it that way. So that's what we did. But I would talk to people, and I'd say, dude, you know, go see it because I think you'll be able to talk about it for 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 years. But if you're sitting there and you're watching it, and after about 5 or 6 minutes you don't like it, don't sit there and dislike the picture and lose your money. Get up, go to the tickets, and say you want your money back.
I don't think that's going to happen a single time. I think everybody's going to like it.
We released it first in 75. That was what we did. One person went back and got their money. That doesn't mean that everybody liked it. I don't mean that. But you've seen the picture. It doesn't cater to you. It's telling its story. And if you get caught up, it's a marvelous trip. If you don't, well, for instance, I am inordinately proud of the ending of the picture. Stop and think about it. You know what happened. Okay. I found out over the years that 25% of the people figure out what's happening when the boy looks at the girl right at the very end of the picture. You know what's going to happen. You don't know how, but you know what. So 25% get it there. 25% get the ending of the picture when you hear, you don't see, but you hear the fat dripping into the fire. Remember that?
Sure do.
25% get what happens when the dog says his last line in the picture. 25% of the people have no idea what took place. And I'm so proud of that. I didn't beat you over the head with it.
Sure.
But it's there for you to figure out. And it's what? Have you ever in your life seen a picture with an ending like that?
Not at all. That's And we won't give anything away for anybody.
No. People won't talk about it. No. But anyway, please tell your audience thank you. And I thank you. It's been very enjoyable.
Well, for me, that was about as much fun as I'm legally allowed to have on a podcast. I could just talk with L.Q. Jones for hours and hours and hours, and maybe someday I'll get another chance to do it again. I sure hope so. That was great fun for me. I want to thank everybody involved in getting the podcast up and running. My wife, Claire McCullough, who is also my wonderful announcer. I want to thank Rob Clearfield and Gary Rand for writing my theme music, front and aft. James Hutchins for designing my website, thecommentarytrack.com, and also my personal website, frankthompson.tv. The footsteps you hear around in the background are my dog, Maggie, who cannot decide whether she wants to be in this room or out, and at the moment she is in, so deal with it, as she is having to do. I want to urge you to go to my website, thecommentarytrack.com. I know Christmas shopping time is nigh, and you're certainly going to be shopping from Amazon, because everybody gets everything from Amazon. So when you do, please click through one of my two sites, and that means when you buy from Amazon, I'll get a little bit of a kickback from Amazon. It's not too much, but it certainly helps. I would also recommend, of all my books, the one that you want to buy right now is AMC's The Great Christmas Movies. That was a tie-in book to a special I did for American Movie Classics back in the good old days when it actually showed movies. It was a special by that same title, The Great Christmas Movies, and I wrote and directed it, and I was always very pleased with it. It only played for 5 years. They only licensed the clips for 5 years, and so it will never be seen on TV again, or on DVD, or on anything, or anywhere except in my house, unless you happen to have recorded one all those many years ago. But the book exists, and I have copies, and I will sign them to you, and it makes a dandy Christmas present. So I urge you to buy it. You will find the link on my site under the books link. Either site. So go there. Do that. Help me out. Need some inflow to keep this podcast on the air. Is it even called on the air? I'm not quite sure what you call it anymore, but I need it to keep the podcast rolling. And so I hope that you'll help out. And in the meantime, you'll find some good Christmas time reading. And if you're interested in other subjects, I have lots of books. Buy them all. Buy many of them. Buy multiple copies for everybody you've ever met. That would make me happy. And you would become my new best friend. Thank you. I hope you'll listen again next week. And until then, don't you worry. We'll fix it in post.